Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The machine works. Do the kids know?
Well, yeah, the kids know.
That's great!
It's not that great.
Why?
I shrunk the kids.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and joining me, as always...
Ben Vanel here. Good morning, listeners. Welcome to the show. It's so wonderful to have you here. It's also wonderful to have our third co-host, Mr. Adam Knox.
It might be wonderful for you. It's still difficult for me. I'm sick, and I was at that point where I'm like, I think I'm getting better. And now doing like... A little bit of talking for an hour or two already has made me realize like, oh, yeah, man, you got more to do. You got more mending to get done. But yeah, sorry if my voice sounds a bit gross, but, you know, if you're going to judge me for that, fair enough. Everyone's different.
That's a huge part of the illness process. You start to feel better and you do too much too soon.
Mm.
And in this case, too much was... Playing Grounded for 45 minutes.
I was running around in a garden chopping at stuff.
Honestly, you did seem the most focused and into that game as we were playing it. So clearly, you put all your energy into that. And now for the podcast, the thing with the more listeners. We played
50%,
Grounded.
Baby!
It just came out of early access, like 3 days ago or something?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, quite recently.
Yeah.
And it had been up there since like halfway through last year or something, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, if not longer. It might have even been, like a mid-COVID thing. I can't remember.
I think it was after the Series X was out. But then again, maybe I'm wrong about that even. I feel like it's been around for quite a while and they were talking about it.
Yeah.
And it kind of came and went. And I guess we might as well just right now be like, because I haven't played that much Grounded.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Tommy, you've played a bit, but not that much either, and we just played a bit of co-op for like an hour then.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can watch a video of us on our YouTube playing it all together.
Yep.
I was interested in it. I went in yesterday, played a bit of the single player, and absolutely hated it. And just playing it with you guys, I thought it was going to be like a deathmatch mode or something when you played it online, but you basically go through the same kind of objective beats, but you just have other people running around with you. And I got to say, I enjoyed that a lot more than I did the single player. I just kind of found it a bit like I've done that kind of thing before, that gathering resources and crafting. And I found that, you know, the setting's cool, but the design of it and everything, I just found it very... didn't grab me. Found it a bit, you know, nothing in it to really make me want to stick with it. But yeah, if I was to play through it with you guys or just anyone kind of in the co-op online, I think that'd be the way to do it. Like, I was really enjoying that.
Yeah, it does come across as a little bit No Man's Earth. It is very much like collect these resources to build this thing to allow you to collect more resources. And we did die a heap, and it felt like we were maybe going into the wrong areas. But I think, for the gamer who likes that kind of game, it's probably another great entry in that genre. It seems like.
I was enjoying playing the single player as well, the bit of it that I played yesterday where, I'm not often the biggest go survive person in real life, and in this, I struggle to find reasons to really go with that type of
your genre, health was negatively impacted today by playing a video game.
Yeah, go to the chemist and craft some Dimetap.
But there's a bit more structure to it than, you know, some of those open world kind of games. Like, it does have a bit of a story and missions and objectives to kind of drive you through. And I do really like the setting and the sort of variety it seems like you're going to get throughout that garden. But yeah, it definitely is built with co-op in mind, from The Grounded Up. And so it was, you could tell that there was something there if you're into that type of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe not a game that's necessarily for us, but I think it seems cool.
Yeah, it's on Game Pass, so definitely recommend. If you are going to go in and you have the means to do this, I would recommend getting some pals together and playing it that way, because it completely changed my view of it from having nothing for it to being like, oh yeah, this is fun.
Yeah.
Get the lads on some Grounded.
nice short little review there of Grounded from us. And if you like our podcast, why don't you give us a short little review? We haven't asked for people to do this for a while, but it really does help get our show in front of new people, which is something that we would love to do. So if you like Filthy Casuals, head on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or social media. I believe that, you know, all of those charts take social media into account as well. So a little recommendation, a little nice few words, even just saying thumbs up and giving us five stars genuinely helps the pod. And that's a way to support us if you don't support us on the Patreon, on the Patreon or something like that. So, yeah, I just wanted to remind people that they can do that if they want to, and we really genuinely appreciate it.
Yeah, helps a lot. Oh, and
yes,
we should say that us playing Grounded was for our YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah.
We weren't just fucking around with it. If you're interested in seeing a bit more of it and seeing us play and talk about it, it's on our YouTube channel, as is dozens of videos at this point.
I think it's hundreds.
So it's hundreds?
It's
okay.
Definitely hundreds. Right. It's like 300 or something like that, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Something that did not get positive responses was Google Stadia.
Yeah, now that we've said all of that about the podcast, like, hey, go support us because we want to keep doing it. It's time to announce that we'll be shutting down the podcast on January 18th, 2023. We haven't alerted anybody.
No refunds for the premium tier patrons.
No, but Google is doing that. It's crazy.
Right.
This is not completely unexpected, I guess, but the suddenness with which Google announced they're shutting down Stadia, to the point where developers who were working on games for Stadia learned it from this announcement. Like, updates and full games were in production for this, and they were like, oh, okay, do we fucking stop then? What do you mean?
Yeah. It's just fully going away. There's not going to be any ongoing support. Your library will disappear. You do get refunds for subscriptions that like go past that shutdown date.
Game you've bought on there, you get a refund because you'll never be able to play them again.
Yeah. That's fair enough.
Yeah, I probably legally have to do this, you know.
Sure. You can't ever play it again, so, you know, you can't be too mad about that. But, you know, if it's a game that you invested a lot of hours into, you know, you get the money back, so you can just go and buy it on another platform eventually, but then you got to start from scratch, which is a huge bummer.
So, some people have, like, you know, games as a service, for example, that are on there, like Destiny and whatever. Bungie's come out and been like, we'll sort you out, don't worry. And, like,
oh, Ubisoft, sure.
I think has said they'll activate those games that you had on there on their own Uplay thing.
Yes.
So, which is maybe worse than just not being able to play them. So people seem to be trying to do the right thing by it. I mean, obviously, you know, it's all companies, so I guess just for optics and whatever, but it's good.
Like the weird thing is like this is all going to be as smooth a process as possible because Google is one of the biggest companies in the world and they have money to burn. But that also begs the question of, like, why shut it down now? Like, surely they could have supported this financially. Like, it can't have been a company threatening drain on their finances. Why now? Why when things like xCloud and PlayStation streaming and Switch, you know, cloud gaming are also in their infancy? Like, why bow out now before this has become, you know, what I assume it will be, which is like an embedded way to play games.
Same with like Google Plus. They just kind of dropped it really quick. Like, there's a number of Google things where if it's sort of not working out quite early, they'll be like, whatever.
Yeah. Which, bailing out when it feels like they didn't even really do all that much to get people on board with it. No, like, yeah. Genuinely, if it weren't for doing this podcast and trawling the news every week for things to talk about, I don't think I would have ever known that it existed.
Especially in Australia.
Yeah. Absolutely. It kind of feels like to bail out when you barely made any kind of push to get people to know that it exists is strange. But, yeah.
And Google is, yeah, giving those refunds, but they're not doing anything in the way of, like, trying to get those saves across. Like, that's the actual developers having to do that themselves to try and do it right. Like, there's a couple of games that are exclusive to Stadia.
Yeah.
Now the developers are being like, okay, well, this means that we're free of our exclusivity contract, I think, so we'll bring them over to PC normally.
Right.
Those controllers they gave out with Stadia are weirdly tied to only being usable with Stadia via Bluetooth. You can plug them into a PC and they work, but as a Bluetooth controller, it only works with Stadia.
Unless weird.
I don't know if Google intends to update that, but someone you would imagine will come up with an update for that. But yeah, that's a strange extra little thing. But so it's what is that? Like just under 4 years they were able to keep that up for.
Fuck.
March 2019. Damn. It was launched. So, yeah, rest in peace, Google Stadia. We barely knew ya.
We really did. Honestly, barely knew ya. Like, the rollout, it being sort of trials in different regions, everything about it felt so tentative and non-committal. The fact that, yeah, the exclusive games that are on it are smaller games from like, AA, you know, publishers or developers at best. It's like you're the fucking second biggest company in the world after Amazon. Why did you allow this to fail?
Well, what bigger company could have done this? Oh, let me Google it. Oh, wait. It's fucking Google. Yeah. It's a management, some manager there, some person has got to be a little like, fuck it, dump it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
A little trigger happy with that. Possibly, well, cause, but it did also seem like they weren't super invested in it from when they launched it, because there was like this weirdly half-hearted thing for most of the time. Them also charging full price for these streaming games rather than having like a Game Pass style service, which is what we all assumed it would be when it was announced. Mm-hmm. That, I think, was a big error.
Yes, it only appealed to people who didn't own a PC or a console, because... Yeah, like if you already had a piece of hardware that you could play games on, then yeah. But like, okay, it's just another shop front with full price games and weird controllers. And even underlining like the fact that you could use existing, you know, other controllers with the service was a bit, you know, not surfaced properly. It everything about it was just off.
I think it's,
you know, cloud gaming appeals to people with fast internet, but... Yeah, they just didn't quite get it right.
Yeah, I think it's fairly telling about Stadia that a lot of the people I've seen be like, Stadia's actually all right, are also like, I got it because at one point it was the cheapest way to get a Chromecast. So I don't know how many people were ever interested in Stadia as its own thing, but whatever, doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
They flew too close to the sun. Better to head back to their original gaming service, which was just... occasionally putting a very simplistic game into the Google Doodle. That's a good thought. People lost their minds when fucking Pac-Man showed up in there one day.
When it's a free bonus.
Just stick to that.
Yeah.
If that little Google symbol had been like, by the way, pay us $6 so you can play Pac-Man. It's the same price as anywhere else.
Well, and I mean, from now on, if they're putting like Assassin's Creed Valhalla in the Google Doodle, That would win me back over.
That's sick, yeah.
Yeah.
You need a special controller to play it.
Yeah, I guess. Nah. Yeah, I'm back
out.
And
your character is like just a weird red G.
Yeah.
Yep.
I guess the G is blue in Google.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry for getting that wrong, everybody. I'm so sorry. I've been cancelled like Stadia. Just the suddenness of it and everything is so shitty to do to developers and stuff as well. That's kind of thoughtless way to do it, but yeah.
I guess they figure if they give them the heads up, then it's going to leak inevitably anyway, as everything tends to now. So
sure,
but yeah. Well, hey, we should say we are at the time of recording, we are about 20 hours away from the premiere of the trailer for the Super Mario Brothers movie. It's happening in the form of a Nintendo Direct, which is very funny because I believe it's just going to be the trailer airing at a set time, which I don't know. I respect keeping all the branding in-house, but it seems very unnecessary.
I think there's more stuff to it because the way they said it was like a Nintendo Direct featuring the trailer. I think there'll probably be more stuff, maybe like a little interview or something. I don't know that, but...
I imagine they'd at least introduce it and have a little spiel about it. I'm going to see if I can find the actual media release about it.
But less than 12 hours from
the you might be listening to this while that's out in the world and be wondering why we're not touching on it, and that's why. But what they have shared is a teaser poster.
Yeah.
Which I got to say looks pretty good. It's restored my faith in the project a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
It looks like Mario. That they've it's some CG art that looks like how Mario looks.
Yeah, it's a cool like big grand scale, like big tall kind of thing with all these like different pipes and little levely looking things on it. It's like, all right, I think, you know, they kind of get it. But the cause for alarm is that Mario has his back to the viewer in a very like the actual, you know, how he looks is going to be this big reveal in the trailer. And that gives me the heebie-jeebies about what Illumination are going to have been allowed to do with the design.
We've all seen his face because, what was it, someone working in a fucking Best Buy?
A McDonald's.
A
Macca's, it was McDonald's. Yeah, right. Which apparently McDonald's also was responsible for leaking the early Sonic imagery as well. But there is a picture of Mario on a bit of McDonald's, you know, promo press print art. And he looks a bit strange.
He just looks like, that kind of little bit off, like, why did you change his face just a bit? Like, it's not that he looks more like Chris Pratt or anything. He just looks like somebody had Mario described to them and then had another crack at it. Just that little bit weird.
He's got big fat shoulders. I think it's a strange angle as well, right? He's sort of like jumping and also it's a weird angle of the print ad that the photo is of.
Sure.
It is also definitely Mario. Like you look at it and you're like, oh, that's Mario's face. So it's not like too like, oh no, what have they done to my boy?
No, it's not ugly Sonic or anything like that by any means.
No. In this poster as well, a couple little details that are here that I can see. There's an antique shop. Yep. And in the antique shop, it's all little 8-bit pickups from the early games.
Yeah.
So they're making jokes about how the older games are old.
Okay.
Captain Toad. Some meta stuff.
We love that.
Captain Toad's there.
Yes.
Yep.
Captain Toad and his little team are all kind of walking around. Or they're just other Toads, but that's definitely the captain. There's another shop.
Aquarium with one of the little fishies on it.
Yep.
Something I noticed that gives me a very bad vibe is that you might notice Mario on his little boots, he's got little shoelaces, which says to me that there's going to be part of like a 3/4 of the way through montage, like a close up of him lacing up the boots and going, let's do this, which.
Or it'll be like a big dramatic build up and he'll go to jump and trip over his own shoelace and be like, oh no.
I mean, just the dynamic of Miyamoto being in at the office in at Illumination, the makers of Minions, and just them having to have a powwow about what this movie should be is so fascinating to me. Just them pitching a lot of like, we got this kind of humor, and just this old Japanese man looking back at them and being like, in his Pikmin shirt, being like, what the fuck? What are you talking about?
You all need to keep in mind, Mario's main trait is cool. That's always been his big thing about Mario. He's got weird little spit gloves. And yeah, people are like making fun of him like he doesn't have an ass. I don't know. I think that's how people look in dungarees.
Yeah.
He's got a normal ass there.
He's a man who has like a giant head and a 3/4 body. And he's wearing overalls and he's not real.
Yeah, he's
I don't know what you expected. That's right. But then the, also, like, there's texture to the overalls. The hat looks like it's made of felt. Like, there's a realistic texture to a lot of this stuff, which I think we all agree, like, worked in the Pokemon movie. It worked in Sonic when it actually came out. Like, it's fine to make that leap. I actually think it was, like, some of the coolest stuff about the animation of Detective Pikachu. So, I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm still excited to see it. I'm more excited to see the trailer, and I'd love to see the animation matching up with the voice cast that, you know, we're already aware of. So, yeah, very excited to see this this Nintendo Direct tomorrow.
The poster renewed my faith in it quite a bit. Because, I mean, if this was like a teaser poster for a new game, I'd be losing my fucking mind.
Oh,
like,
sure.
I love the scale of the world, and it seems like they kind of, they really get this sort of space that these games inhabit and kind of fleshing them out into like a real actual three-dimensional thing that the games have never really had to bother with. So, if they pull that off, then, I'm excited to see the full trailer.
Yeah. You can listen to our episode where we reveal the entire plot from a couple of months ago, I think that was.
Yeah.
So that was really fun. It's definitely going to be actually the plot of the movie.
I'm hoping we get in the trailer. I'm hoping we see a good amount of Jack Black's Bowser. That's the thing. I keep mentally coming back to that, and I'm like, you know what? This could rule. This could be fucking sick.
Yeah, I think Seth Rogen as Donkey Kong is still the best casting. That's fucking great. But yeah, we'll see more tomorrow.
We'll find out tomorrow.
One thing we'll never see is the proper sequel to Disco Elysium that they were developing, because a bunch of the main people at that studio have been, what was the term they used? They left involuntarily, something like that?
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. They involuntarily departed the studio. So those people are the lead writer and designer, the lead artist, and one of the writers. So, the thing with the studio behind Disco Elysium is it was like the gaming studio arm of a sort of progressive art collective. I think they're based in London or somewhere in the UK at least. And they had been making stuff before this game. It just wasn't games. By the sounds of things, it was more like, digital art, sort of experimental installation art and stuff like that. But it sounds like
installation art, that's when like the big 640 by 480 images you got when you were like putting Diablo on your computer.
That's right. That's right. The splash screen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I guess it was like the sort of very pixelated Microsoft installer thing where it was like the little files coming out of the filing thing and into a computer.
Nice.
Yeah, loved that.
Yeah.
That did so look they, cool.
They really
can't believe they're actually moving files around in there.
I know. But this collective has grown a lot, clearly. They went from that to making Disco Elysium, which was a fantastic game. Very cool visuals and, the writing and sort of the creative vision of that game was, you know, why it was so sick. So it is really a shame that these people have been forced out. I guess it's a company, so they would have been fired from the company and some kind of weird crossover with having to leave the, you know, the collective as a thing.
Yeah, we don't know why, right?
No, it doesn't look like it. No, it doesn't. but so who's this guy? Martin Luigi. He's also a founding member of the collective, and he was an editor on Disco Elysium. So he's the one who announced it. He followed up to say that someone asked about how it would affect the sequel, and he said, "Nah, I think that things with the sequel are actually sweet enough. You might even get it the way it was meant. It might take a shit ton of time, but RPG fans are sort of accustomed to waiting, ain't they?" So I assume that like the writing has been done, and the vision behind the sequel was already established. Because they're already working on it, and the people who left are like the writers, designers, and artists, which is a shame. But it's weird. It's like it's one of those too beautiful to be, you know, sustainable things where It seemed like a group of people who were genuinely interested in making like artistic works in the video game space and were less concerned about money. And I think that financial pressures or the people who are in the financial or the production positions were, I think, maybe behind these departures. That's at least been the speculation that it was like a money or a corporate, you know, directed thing, which is, yeah. Not fun.
Yeah, I have seen people sort of commenting that, like, you know, the real sequel to this game about corporate, the capitalism destroying these societies is capitalism destroying the people who created this story about capitalism destroying the world. But like,
yeah,
who knows? I guess we're speculating about why they left because no one said an official thing about it for reasons. But the people who are still there are probably creative people, and I'm sure that whatever they work on, they will be working on with that same ethos that we were just talking about.
So I'll just read. So there's a little Medium post from the guy Martin Luiga, who was also the one responding to tweets, and it says he, as an assembler of most of the core team, is hereby dissolving the ZAUM Cultural Association, and then in brackets, not to be confused with the ZAUM Company. So that is obviously, you know, the company that's making the games.
If I'd have wanted them not to be confused with each other, I'd have named them very different things.
I think that's very fair. The reason for dissolving the cultural organization is that it no longer represents the ethos it was founded on. People and ideas are meant to be eternal. Organizations may well be temporary. So, it just sounded like became a bit of a clusterfuck, but it is a real shame because that game is maybe, you know, it's top two or three all time for me and was beloved and a real artistic statement. So to see like the only organization that is like openly been like number one is the art, number two is the money, it sucks.
Number
it sucks
for the show, but like it does make sense. I think you sort of alluded to this before, that like when you've got something that's a little bit lightning in a bottle like Disco Elysium, it's not surprising to see that foundation struggle to maintain its structural integrity.
Yeah. You see it a lot in the arts, unfortunately.
Yeah. And you see the...
No, go.
Well, I was just going to say, you see the exact opposite thing happening where an unartistic pillar can be the strongest pillar of all, such as remastering Horizon Zero Dawn already.
Yeah.
This almost seems like bait for, you know, it's like, oh, you were worked up about The Last of Us Part 1.
Totally.
Well, fucking, how do you like this?
Mm.
This is someone just pushing the boundaries a little further every time.
Yeah. Coming up next, a remaster of Gran Turismo 7.
Yeah. It's peculiar because that game is out on PC already, so it doesn't have the same thing that we were sort of speculating about The Last of Us Part 1, where they were doing that so that they could get a PC version going as well.
Yep.
And there's there is a Netflix show that they're making of Horizon.
Yeah, that's the one thing that appears to, give it some kind of reason for happening now. But, like, are people really more likely to buy the game after seeing the show if the game says it was remastered in 2023, like, or 2024, whenever this is going to be? Like,
no.
It seems dumb to me.
Especially
and
when...
I'm really smart.
when the things... this is all sort of rumor that does seem pretty confirmed by a number of people. Like, there are a fair few sort of insidery type people who are saying, yeah, this is happening.
Yeah.
But Horizon Zero Dawn, which is 5 fucking years old at this point, nearly 6, but not particularly old. It is, this version will see new character models, improvements to the game's lighting system and animations, and overhauled textures, which are like the elements of the game that least need to be brought up in line with the stuff around the climbing and the way it moves and controls and stuff that I think you could improve that Forbidden West did improve on. And it doesn't sound like that is the focus of this particular project. What the scale of this is to, maybe it's just like a PS5 native version that they're sort of working on. Who knows? But it's peculiar, and it has led to the thing of like, why aren't you doing Bloodborne? It's like, well, because that's a different studio. So like,
yeah, and it's much older, and the code base, you don't know if it's as compatible. And yeah, so like you said, this is coming to PC.
Zero Dawn 1 already is there, and this is like a PS5 remaster that you would assume is coming to PC.
And there's also some old online multiplayer that I think is a new thing for PC that's part of this.
It's a new game similar to that Last of Us one, where they're making a Horizon multiplayer game as a spin-off thing, I guess, like the VR thing or something, where it's just a Horizon thing, but it's a separate multiplayer game that we don't have too many details about yet. Because Sony also said this week that I don't remember what this was in. I think it was some like earnings call, whatever, board thing, where they were talking about how they view putting Sony first party stuff on PC. And were basically like, we're going to keep making the same sorts of games we've been making, but probably expand, meaning games as a service as well as single player.
Right.
And that those types of games as a service game will probably come to PC same day. And that they will continue to put out single-player type stuff on PC, but probably at least a year later is what they said. That was their words, at least a year. So I wouldn't imagine that this Zero Dawn remaster is even necessarily focused on being a PC thing, because that game's already out there. I don't know what the fuck...
Yeah, right.
...who this is for, but that game's still just fine. And Forbidden West is great. I finished it the other day. Sick stupor, and really enjoyed it. It's such a good, beautiful looking, fun to play, creative game that improves on that first one so much. Little buggy, but I love the sort of half cliche, half original sci-fi story they got going on. I love the like semi monster hunter, semi generic third person shooter game they've got under there. It just really all comes together in that second one. So if you've still not played that and have access to it, I reckon give it a little crack.
So the story is still fun? Because I really did like the story of the first one. And I guess, what was it? It was Elden Ring that came out this year right after.
Right after this. A week after, or something.
I've replayed that game 5 times and have not touched Forbidden West since. But... if the story is fun still, I definitely do want to go back to it.
They do a similar thing that was good about the first one, where it sort of reveals about this past world that are the sort of the main thing that's driving you through it, mixed with some, you know, all right side stuff with like the sort of new tribes of the old world. But Aloy is a lot more like confident and knowledgeable the second time, which I think really works. It's got sort of a Mass Effect thing going on where you've got like a base and a crew that develop over time. And it spends its time expanding on that old world of the first one and then setting stuff up for an inevitable third one that I enjoyed. And like good performances, especially from Carrie Ann Moss as she gets more and more involved in the story. I really liked her in it. And Ashley... the actor who plays Aloy is great.
Cool. Ashley Olsen?
Similar.
God, that was the only Ashley I could think of that wasn't just someone we know through the comedy scene in Melbourne.
Ashley Birch.
Ah. Ashley two trees. Birch. Two trees for names. Ash and Birch.
Oh, yeah.
I reckon this woman's secretly a tree.
Forbidden West is still good, and I think it goes on sale every now and again now. So,
I should pick it back up. I did like it when I was playing it, but I felt like I was the beginning of it. It's like so much. It's just like setup after setup after setup, where I felt like it was taking ages to get to a point where I was just kind of in the game and doing my thing, and I feel like I maybe just got to that point, and then Elden Ring came out, and then
I think similar to the first one, that sort of back third of the game is really the bit where you're like, oh, now I'm fully on board with this, which is, you know, kind of weird. And that can be anywhere up to 30 hours in or something. And then if you're doing all the side stuff, you can play that for probably 100 whatever hours. Like,
well, you're going to need more than 100 hours to play all of CG Projekt Red's upcoming games, including The Witcher 3 Remaster, which is slated for sometime this year, which is exciting. That is a game that I would like to play again. It's been probably a couple of years at least since I went all the way through it for maybe the second time.
And that's
beautiful
them doing
game.
Like updates for the current consoles rather than like a re-released remaster. That's a patch.
Yes, it is. It's the next gen patch that so many other games have had already. Yeah. But it is a great excuse to play that. I believe it's free. Yes. I'd be surprised if on the back of their, you know, last few years of PR, if it wasn't free. But on top of that, they've announced the sequel to Cyberpunk is in development. It's called Project Orion. Which is a great chance for them to continue building on the goodwill that they have, because I think a lot of people have come back to Cyberpunk in the past 2 months and really are enjoying it. And then they've also announced a second trilogy of Witcher games.
So they've announced 8 things total.
Jesus!
Yeah, it's crazy because there's the new Witcher trilogy.
Yep.
The first of which were... won't be out until like at least 2025, they've said, which makes total sense. But so they'll be making 3 more Witcher games.
The first one also codenamed Polaris.
So, yes, there's Polaris and then probably some other... I don't know if the second two in that trilogy have their own names, but then there's also a couple of Witcher spin-offs called Sirius and Canis Majoris. And they're both not by CD Projekt. They're both like licensed out Witcher, but one of them's an RPG and the other one I'm not sure. There's Phantom Liberty, which is the Cyberpunk expansion that we knew about. So I guess they didn't announce that. There's Orion, which is a Cyberpunk sequel. And there's something completely new called Haydar.
Yes.
Okay.
This looks like, this is going to be their next IP, their next potential, you know, blockbuster franchise.
And I think an original thing is the idea. They're not going to be, because Cyberpunk licensed from the RPG, the tabletop thing, The Witcher is from the books. I think this is their own thing.
Yeah. They're quoted as saying that it is an entirely distinct IP and that it will be created from scratch.
So that's, it's a shame what happened with Cyberpunk. It really seems as though they know why it fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
Have been able to patch a lot of why it fucked up and have been able to recoup a bit of that goodwill, not to the same degree that they would have had in, you know, July of 2020 or whatever.
Yeah.
But clearly they think they've got it in them to make 150 games, so go for it.
I think I'll talk about it next week because we're going to talk about the Netflix anime series. But I have been playing Cyberpunk again. And even as someone who enjoyed it the first time, it has had so many improvements patched in that just make it more fun to play. And yeah, I think that in retrospect, it really was like, okay, so they developed a single player campaign that happened to be first person shooter. They developed the visuals of a big city, and then they ran out of time to do anything in terms of fleshing that city out, making it feel lived in, or even making any of the AI work properly. So clearly they've spent a couple of years just doing that shit.
Right. It's similar to No Man's Sky and like other kind of big bomb type of games where often with a game that bombs like that, it's just that it came out before it was done.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So good for them.
Yeah.
I like The Witcher. The fact that they said they were never going to make another Witcher game a couple years ago, and now they're like, oh, we meant 5.
Yeah.
Sorry, we did press the wrong key. We said 0, but we meant 5. It's crazy, but all right.
Even if Cyberpunk was a huge success, and it was financially, I think people always forget that. Like, it made heaps and heaps of money. Even with the refunds counted in, you know, made millions and millions of dollars. Like, I guess they were probably just going to make more Cyberpunk games, and then they realize, like, well, we've still got to make more Cyberpunk games, but now we've probably got to make even more Witcher games because that's what people think of as liking from us.
Yeah, and I guess they they certainly know how to, at least, you know, The Witcher 3 is one of the best games that's ever been made still. So, like, yeah. I'm not going to say no. I'll say, okay, with a little skeptical look that's quite condescending to a group of people who know much more about building games than me.
Yeah, I'll feel like maybe if they had just gone straight into this new IP, they feel like there would be a bit of maybe like a lack of trust after Cyberpunk. So they kind of need to just like, yeah, cleanse the palate with a bit of Witcher in between.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. You don't want to play Hader. It's a game about a guy who could do pretty good impressions on SNL.
Oh, okay. All right. A Barry game would be fucking awesome.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I've been playing something close to a Barry game.
Okay.
Kind of.
All right.
Bayonetta. Bayonetta.
Yeah.
I played through Bayonetta 1.
I would contend that that is nowhere, that's not close to Barry at all.
No. She's a witch rather than a hitman, but is killing things.
Yeah. She's kind of an assassin and in a sense.
Like it's almost like she's an actor because she's like a stripper, so...
She's a
in
performer,
the entertainment industry.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, okay.
It's a fun fucking game.
Hell yeah.
I really, really enjoyed playing through Bayonetta 1. I played it on the Wii U. I found a Wii U in a garbage pile near your parents' house, Tommy. and it was a good fucking time. It's such a stupid game. It's so hard to make sense of what the story is meant to be, but I ended up really enjoying that aspect of it. I didn't quite realize what a... Because it's by... oh, God, what's his name? Resident Evil 2 Devil May Cry guy.
Hideki...
Yeah. Him.
Kamiya?
That sounds right. I'm gonna quickly look it up. And I didn't think about the fact... You've got it exactly right, Tommy. That would mean cool. We're walking around little areas and going and interacting with strange statues and doing all of that shit.
Right.
As well as this really fun... combat system that just completely stayed engaging the whole way through.
It just, it feels fucking awesome, doesn't it? Like, I haven't played one, I've only played two, but I mean, just immediately for me, that feeling of just pulling off those combos and getting the butt and, you know, doing it all correctly and just how fucking powerful you feel and like this giant like fist bursting out of you, like it just... It just feels so... It just might be one of the most fun-feeling things to play. It's so fucking good.
I don't need to play Bayonetta to feel like that, because that's how I am when I fight people in real life.
Yeah, right. Well, if you're not...
Ben's doing a lot of PR for himself on this app.
If you've never played Bayonetta or walked a mile in Ben's shoes, just to give you a little explanation of it...
Or played Devil May Cry.
It is similar to Devil May Cry. It's kind of Devil May Cry if the importance of the shooting and the melee were flipped. Mm. Where the shooting is the less important in Bayonetta, you're punching and you're kicking is your main meat and potatoes. You're running up to a bunch of different sort of angels. They're all heaven. I love that Japanese thing of making Christian imagery look all weird and beating it up. Mm. And you're beating up a bunch of angels in pretty interesting environments, going through and building up this sort of... special gauge thing that once you get that up, you can do like a powerful torture attack thing where you're doing a lot of damage to an enemy and hammering a button. And then the main thing is that you are dodging out of the way of attacks at the last second to enter witch time, which is bullet time, but you're a witch and you can beat up enemies in slow motion. It's just so satisfying figuring out all the different types of enemies' attacks so that you can dodge them well. Going through each of the creative different ways it gives you these combat scenarios with little twists on them, all the cool like wall running stuff when you're in the moon, you can run on the walls. The weird, stupid story ends up being fun. It doesn't make any fucking sense. I'm going to give you a little bit of a spoiler for Bayonetta 1. at the end, you meet your dad who has... been trying to get this young version of you the whole time, but then you take the young version off of him and take her back to her time and then go back to your time, and he's like, haha, that was my actual plan. Now you are the power. And it doesn't... I don't get it. But then he puts you in like a big statue's eye and you go up and get out of the statue's eye and that statue is like a big god and you fight it. It's
fuck
sick.
Yeah.
And then there's it's so much fun. I massively recommend playing this. I'm going to do 2 before 3 comes out.
I think you'll love 2 because from what I heard at the time, 2 kind of leaves 1 for dead.
Right.
Which is why I kind of never... I think when 2 came out, you got 1 as a...
There
was like a bonus
there
on
was
the
a
Switch
double
or
pack
something.
Thing.
It was like a double pack or something.
I've only played 2, and I don't know by the sounds of things if 1 has this, but 2 reminded me a lot of God of War pre the reboot, where the scale of the enemies was huge. The bosses were massive. There was a lot of like clambering and platforming around, it was a lot of. What would be the word? Set pieces. There were huge scale set pieces in 2. Is that also there in 1?
Yes, I think maybe to a lesser degree than might be the case for 2, because it's definitely there, but it's not like... There's some really cool parts where you're like... again, spoilers for 1, there's like a level where you're on a motorbike going down a highway and there's a level where you're riding on a rocket and doing like a space Harrier level. And some of the bosses, like these... quite big things where you're like surfing around in the ocean trying to shoot it. But like, I wouldn't put it necessarily on the same sense of scale as God of, or those early God of Wars, but similar.
Mm.
But certainly it sounds like 2 kind of ups the ante a bit. But 1 is still really great. And I really, really enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would for some reason. I was always a bit... you know, humming and whoring about Bayonetta for some reason. I don't know why.
I was humming about Bayonetta.
Also, I really liked that element of it, of like Bayonetta's character is actually pretty fun. The silly stripper with guns for heels is like, it really works and it doesn't feel like this kind of... The thing that you might assume that it is when you're like, here's a Japanese game about a lady with big tits. You're like, here we go again.
Right.
But she's cool.
Yeah, it's not gratuitous. It's because she's the protagonist. She has all the power and agency and she's cool. Like, it's about her being cool and you know.
And it's fun and silly. She does these dances that like don't, they just for whatever reason, and I can't put my finger on why, and if I could, I'd be a full-on academic, but for whatever reason, they don't feel like male-gazy. They feel fun.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know what makes the difference there. Maybe the difference is that I've gotten worse and I accept it more. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I went to a strip club the other day. Didn't feel male-gazy at all.
Yeah, everyone was straight as hell. I just really liked it. I really enjoy playing Bayonetta. It's fun, it's silly, it's creative, and I'm really looking forward to the 3rd one, and the 2nd one will be new to me in the meantime.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 3rd one's like 3 weeks
it's this
away
month,
or
yeah.
something. Yeah, yeah, it's October the 28th, I believe. So yeah, coming up, that's kind of snuck up, but yeah, I can't wait for that. And yeah, if you haven't gone in yet, you can get... 1 and 2 are both on the Switch. Yeah, I think at one point there was like a double pack of both of them. I think they've just brought 1 out physically because you could only download it for a while there.
Yeah.
So they just bought a physical edition.
1 is on like all of the consoles as well and on PC, but 2 is like locked to Nintendo stuff.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But yeah, they are both on Switch and I think go on sale fairly regularly. I played them, I played 1 and I'm going to play 2 on the Wii U. And 1 runs just fine on the Wii U as well. So I'm not too worried about how Bayonetta 3 will be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a Switch game and being something that is about that kind of scale and big wacky things going on and the 60 frames thing really matters.
Right. Right.
There were a few drops on it in the Wii U, but they really seem to be prioritizing the right things there. So it makes me feel confident that 3 will continue that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Tommy, did you end up playing a game that does not quite require the same graphical fidelity or high processing power? Did you end up playing a game that I really enjoyed the past week, Let's Build a Zoo?
I dipped in on it and sort of similar to what I was saying about Grounded, it to me it was just a bit of like, I've done this a bit recently, so it didn't really have enough to fully grab me in. I could appreciate that if you're after a what would you call it, like a theme hospital Sim City kind of game, it's a good version of them. But I was just kind of you know, those games always like at the very very start, like this, it's so just like this barren block of land, and oh, you got to build a pen and now put some rabbits in it. And I just was like, oh, I just don't really have the patience to do another one of these from scratch right now.
Well, bitch, I do. I love it. It is, it's 2D. That's the main thing that is worth pointing out, is that it is not a sort of Planet Zoo style game. It is more of a throwback to your, your olden days versions of this. Actually, I guess they didn't really have 16-bit city building, theme park building games in the same way, did they?
There was a version of SimCity for the SNES, is what this kind of looks like. The graphics are very pixel-arty. It looks like if you zoomed out on a Game Boy Advance game.
Right. It's not isometric, I guess, is the thing.
No,
it's
top
the main
down.
Distinct thing. Yeah, it's top down. You got your little sort of 8-bit, 16-bit people walking around. And it honestly, it is a traditional sort of format of like, here's your zoo, your tutorial will let you get it set up, the missions will be, you know, get a certain amount of people through the gate, get a certain amount of different kinds of animals. But I'm just finding the flow of it to be really, really enjoyable, because unlike, most of your other, like I played Planet Zoo recently, it's not like buy a tiger, import the tiger, make sure the tiger's enclosure has tiger stuff. It is like, all right, build a little field enclosure. From the start, you can go to like this one place in the world that lets you adopt or rescue animals. And they're like rabbits and pigs. And so you adopt a couple rabbits, a couple of pigs. People start coming through the turnstiles and they're like, hey, look at those cute rabbits. And those rabbits will breed. And those rabbits' babies will breed, and you'll start to get new little variants as they continue to have kids. And zoos around the world will be like, hey, if you trade this special rabbit, we'll give you a snake or two snakes. Or, hey, you know, if you got this kind of pig that's got is brown, we'll give you a goose. And so you start to introduce these different kinds of animals. The animal adoption rescue place also will kind of cycle through new animals as time passes. And you kind of slowly build up your menagerie by doing that. And you'll also at the same time have constant little objectives from different people around the zoo of like, get certain amount of people through the turnstiles and we'll give you a financial bonus. Or like, today, the vampire's visiting, so make sure there's some spooky animals for them to see. Or
you'd think vampires wouldn't want to like do their work on their off time.
Yeah, they are spooky.
Or I think actually literally what the quest is make sure you have a subway system installed so they can go from one bit to the other bit in the, you know, without going through the sun. But it also like literally was a vampire, so it's like introducing these like silly sort of fun versions of your traditional city builder, you know, park builder quests. I think because it's 2D, it felt less overwhelming than a lot of those other kinds of games tend to. If you dive fully into Planet Coaster, it can be a bit like, how many fucking things have I got to manage here to make sure that this actually runs well? As opposed to like us just fucking around in it and making the suicide coaster. This just felt a little bit simpler. Like I felt like the tutorial was easy to, you know, wrap my head around, and things do escalate relatively slowly. It has all the normal stuff of, you know, managing the park staff and setting ticket prices and making sure that the animals have, you know, little balls to play with and water to drink and, you know, all that sort of normal stuff. But, I don't know. I'm just finding it a really enjoyable version of one of those games. It's a really good one to, you know, chuck on a podcast or an audiobook and just, you know, click away. And I find the design aspect of these games to be very fun. I do see a empty pen or a, you know, an empty block of land and get excited about, you know, turning right. that into something that, that like works and looks cool. So I just have that base level of engagement and enjoyment of these games. But yeah, this one's really fun. It's on Game Pass. It's also on, I think, Steam and maybe Switch.
It's on the Switch, yeah.
Yeah. I'd recommend playing it on a PC with a mouse, just because it's, you know, that much easier. But I just generally recommend it if you're a fan of, you know, the zoo roller coaster tycoon-y sort of games. This is a sick one. Don't discount it for being 16-bit by any means.
I think that's the nice robust thing about it, that it does have like a different, yeah, it's such a different aesthetic to all those other style of this game that are popular at the moment. It definitely sticks out.
Yeah. It is, I think, a little bit less complex or demanding. I do think that it kind of matches the aesthetic in terms of, like, you can fuck around with heaps of different stuff, but most of the time you're, like, ticking off these quests, getting a bit more money. Like, at no point have I felt, like, have I, you know, been low on funds or anything like that. Right. You know, it's more, it's just a chill and fun version of these, I think.
Cool.
Right.
But yeah, well, check it out.
Speaking of the design element of this game, I've fired up a game that is very design heavy, Super Mario Maker 2, to play something that we talked about last week, a guy who made his own version of a Super Mario Brothers 5. It's 8 worlds. It's, I think it's 40 courses or something like that. He's made like a fully... a fully fleshed out 2D Mario game within Mario Maker, which is sort of, you know, the promise of being able to do that after they introduced the world map thing. Mm. But, to you know, this is kind of the first one that's really gotten traction and kind of been put out there as like, this is the one. And I'm loving it. He has fucking nailed it. His brief of this was meant to be... The idea behind it is this is the game that Nintendo themselves would have made if they continued on with numbered entries in just the Super Mario Brothers after Super Mario World. What would they have done? Mm. And he's very clear about, like, he's not trying to troll you. He's not trying to, like, just have these brutal levels that are going to kill you again and again and again. He's tried to do as much kind of, like, interesting design. And yeah, he's done such a good job of, like, all the levels have a neat little kind of different visual theme to them. He's got ones that have little puzzles. He's got, like, yeah, he's got these, he's just done a lot with the, I mean, it is a pretty broad toolbox that you get in Mario Maker 2, but it is still, you know, he's not a dev, like, making this himself. Mm. He is still making it inside a relatively constricted level editor. And yeah, it's really, really fucking impressive. I'm having a blast with it and consistently forgetting that, like, oh yeah, this is just a thing that one dude made. Like,
Me too.
Yeah.
It's just like the fact that, yeah, you end the level and you can rate it. That is the reminder of like, oh yeah, yeah, this. Because it does flow together, you know, one from the next. I've just done the first world, but that, I think, it increases in difficulty in a really Nintendo-like way. You know, that first airship is really clever in how it's designed. Like, it makes you think for a second at certain points about how to navigate it even. It's great. I really recommend it for any Mario fan. Especially if you're someone like me who loved basically anything up to the Super NES era and didn't ever get hugely into the 3D ones. This is... Honestly, it's almost reason enough to buy Super Mario Maker 2. Because
if you've got it, there's like a whole, basically a whole new cool 2D Mario game in there. So if you just Google like fan-made Mario Brothers 5 Mario Maker, you'll be able to find the little code for it to put in. Look, it would be great to live in a world where Nintendo play nice with kind of fan stuff a bit more, because... Someone kind of taking this, because also he was working on this back in Mario Maker 1 as well, and he moved it all over into 2.
Yeah.
It would be cool to see someone sort of take these level designs and put new sprite art on them, because he's only used sprite art from He hasn't used any of the new ones that are in there. So no new Super Mario Brothers, no Mario Brothers, 3D World art styles. But yeah, someone doing some new Mario pixel art that, you know, was kind of like a imagining that it was like the Game Boy Advance era or something and sort of, you know, taking these level designs and giving them a cohesive thing would be fucking cool. Or Nintendo themselves like tapping this guy and going like, hey, why don't you make a little small little indie for us? Like it obviously will never happen. But yeah, this feels like kind of like a Sonic Mania kind of thing almost.
Yes. Yes.
On Twitter, this guy is called Metroid Mike 64. So you can go look his thing up there, and I'll put a little his maker ID in the episode description too, if you want to just go copy it out of there.
Yeah, it is weird that like I just like booted up the game for the first time in you know a year or whatever, and went to you know popular game like popular levels, popular worlds, and it's not there. Like you still have to look it up, and it's probably because all those popular ones are like the ones where you just like boot up the level and it just automatically moves you through
Rube Goldberg this machine little, sort of stuff.
But I thought it was fantastic. And like, honestly, you know, credit to Nintendo for introducing the world system and allowing people to make these kinds of, you know, fan-made games. It just happened that it took one guy to, you know, devote like 7 years of his life to it, but there's a really, really good one in there now. And
it's cool to have that promise finally fulfilled on of just like, cool, he's just a straight, because you could go fucking around and looking for, you know, just random ones. But yeah, someone who's actually taken the time to craft and really think about like a game and how it flows from level to level. It's really, really good stuff.
Honestly, forget Nintendo. This guy probably, I'm sure from the press from this, has gotten interest from publishers and stuff to just make his own game. Like, I'd love to see this guy make his own 2D platformer, whatever.
Do some,
art style that takes. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Cool. Mario Maker 1 is still, you can still download levels in that on the Wii U, I found out by playing the Wii U. Yeah. Speaking of things that had a version called 1 and then a very similar version called 2 that just sort of overrode the first version.
Yes, yes.
Overwatch 2 is technically out. Yep. It is one of the strangest, like, just in terms of logistics video game releases that I know about.
Yeah. There was, I feel like there was something in the past 6 months where it was also, and I think you played it, whatever it was, Nox, that you just sat in a lobby for, you know, half an hour. Mm. It might have been a Call of Duty beta or something where it was this exact thing of booting up the game, signing into your Battle.net account, and then waiting for 50,000 other people to make their way into matches before you.
Yeah, and we've got it slightly easier even, like, so before we even talk about the game, like, I think this is a US thing. I don't think it's happening in Australia that you have to link a phone or something like that, like your identity to your account. Yeah. You're being kind of forced to do that for security reasons, but like,
yes,
if you're on a prepaid plan, it doesn't work apparently.
Yeah,
over there, and
yeah.
You need to send them like an electricity bill and shit. It's very weird.
So I haven't had to
interact with that at all, but...
No, neither. I assume this is because of the DDoS attack, right?
No, they were already planning it. This was already going to be the thing. It's like a two-factor ID authentication, security, whatever thing.
Right.
It must be against the law here or something.
Right.
Because it's certainly, it hasn't popped up for me.
No, neither.
Australia.
Yeah, and Australia, we handle, user identity and privacy so well here.
Yeah, true. Maybe that's why I didn't have to do it, because they just went to Optus and got it direct.
Yeah.
So once you're able to actually, there were DDoS attacks, which often happens with, like, Blizzard releases in particular for whatever reason.
Right.
But once you're actually able to play Overwatch 2, you will find that, so this has deleted Overwatch 1.
Yes.
That no longer exists. You cannot play that game anymore.
Yep.
Overwatch 2 is all that exists. And Overwatch 2 is Overwatch 1 with 3 more characters. And it's free to play now and has a battle pass.
Right.
And one day we'll have like a sort of single player or co-op, you know, PvE component to it. That's certainly not here yet. This is just a weird patch for Overwatch 1 in a strange way.
Yeah, but it doesn't cost money, so it's just... Yeah, but the Battle Pass
thing... Can't really get mad about it, yeah.
It looks... Well, if you liked Overwatch 1 and everything about it...
so, yes, that's the other thing is... I guess, yeah, it has changed more stuff than I make it sound like. Because rather than it being 6v6, it's 5v5 now. They've changed how the game itself works. There's one fewer tank on each team.
Yep.
I played a bit of Overwatch 1 back when it came out, so 6 years ago now, and enjoyed it at the time. And then very quickly, people got really good at it, and I didn't. And so I fell off of it, and people are still very good at it from how much I've played of it, you know, recently. But if you've never played Overwatch, it is a, like, hero shooter was the term they were calling them back in the day, where it's kind of like you've got almost like a MOBA-y kind of big cast of characters who each have a few different abilities and a different weapon and fill different roles in a team.
It kind of looks at, it's set out at the bottom sort of like a fighting game roster. But then, yes, broken into categories of basically healer, all-rounder, or soldier, or whatever, and tank. It's only three, right?
It's only those three. But then in those three, you've got all these different characters who each have different abilities. You've got, like, three different abilities, a gun, and then a super ability.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot to keep track of as you're learning it. And it will take you a while to figure it out, and it is not a forgiving game if you don't know, you know, in quotes, how to play it.
Right, because it does play out very similarly to a, you know, like a Halo multiplayer or a Call of Duty team deathmatch or Capture the Flag. Like, it is a frenetic team-based online shooter.
It's similar to them with also, like, a your Leagues of Legend or whatever, like... you're certainly expected to fulfill your role correctly, and your team working together will, if the other team is working together and yours is not, you won't win.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I never played Overwatch 1, but I did give this a go, especially, you know, because it is free to play, and I already had a BattleNet account, which... I remember, I think I tried to play maybe Diablo 2 Remastered and had to go through this fucking nightmarish process of re-authenticating and getting through to the customer support team, which fucking sucked. But anyway, yeah, straight into this after waiting half an hour to get into the actual servers. But I fucking loved it. I've never really taken hugely to your... vanilla style first-person shooter online multiplayer. I found Halo to be a bit too much for me. It was a bit too fast twitch and it was a bit too frenetic. Call of Duty, I just find similar. You know, it's a bit too much based on reflexes. Battlefield, I was always more into because there was some sense of strategy to it. And this, I think, the teamwork aspect really drew me into it. I was always picking just the soldier. I got to, you know, get a handle on the controls through the tutorial, and so just stuck with that character that I'd, you know, been playing with. And because there are people who are experts in the healer stuff, in the support stuff, and all of the abilities, I was just kind of able to run around shooting people. And honestly, within a couple of matches, I felt like I'd got, you know, got my head around it. I really enjoyed the Capture the Flag stuff. I really enjoyed even the visuals, but yeah, the mechanics of movement and shooting in it really gelled with me. Don't know why, but they really just did, and I had a great time with it yesterday.
Before the sort of Battle Royale type games came along, this was the bridge between Call of Duty being the biggest multiplayer shooter. Then it was kind of Overwatch for a bit before it was, you know, PUBG and then Apex Legends and whatever, and Fortnite. This fits in closer with like an Apex or one of those types, or like Valorant or whatever, I think, where you've got these abilities and you're expected to do teamwork, and that's really the focus more than your mechanical ability, which is still important. But if you know your skills and you know when to use them, then that is what will make the difference here.
Totally.
It's been a good game for 6 years.
Yeah.
And they've, you know, like changed aspects of it, which, you know, Overwatch has fallen out of where it was in like a front runner position in these sorts of multiplayer games. So it makes sense that they would want to do things to reinvigorate it.
Yep.
It's just
to and also like copy even like visual user interface stuff of the big ones. You know, it did feel a bit like a good version of Fortnite to me.
This is pretty similar to how it started off, though. So Overwatch kind of had it first,
right.
In fairness, but it just is. It's really weird to. I mean, it's not weird because online games, this is what they do. You overwrite the old version with a new version that is a patch, and they progress over time. It's just strange, I guess, to have a paid-for product no longer exist in the same way as that's weird with Destiny 2 and is weird with a number of other games that have kind of done this with all the Stadia stuff as well, I guess. Like, the impermanence of what actually you are getting if you buy a game these days is a strange, nebulous thing now because, like, you've still got the same game. Overwatch 2 still exists, but it's also just free now. And technically the thing you bought doesn't exist.
The fact that it is weird. A numbered sequel to a game that, like, you know, going into Fortnite, you know this is a seasonal game where you install it once and you install updates every now and then and the content changes and that's what it is. That's it, what it is as a platform. The fact that this is like, hey, the sequel to Overwatch is out and it is now the only version of Overwatch.
Right.
It's a sequel. I think the particularly...
To number it is weird, not just calling it like Overwatch, like, you know, putting a subtitle on it or something.
Well, and weirdly, this sequel is in early access, even though it also functions as a patch for the first game. So, like, a lot of the content that was meant to be the sort of meat of Overwatch 2 doesn't exist yet. So it's a strange thing that, it certainly is well made and is like a good version of the type of game it is. You will definitely see people disagree with that online, especially people who are really into Overwatch. There's a lot of different back and forth and on the 5v5 has ruined it, or this has ruined it, or this character has ruined it. And like that happens with every iteration on every game on some level.
Yeah.
And Overwatch has
it's weird. I'm just reading. I wanted
vocal fan base.
I wanted to find some like reviews of this. And I mean, it's weird that Forbes has great gaming coverage, but they do. I think a couple of their writers specifically are like, you know, have done some great reviews of big single player games that we've, you know, seen in recent times while we've been doing the podcast.
Right.
But they also have someone who's an Overwatch specialist, and they're fucking glowing on it. That quote, "The decision to drop one tank player per team, despite the reservations that some players have, is one of the best changes Blizzard has ever made to Overwatch. Team fights are more fluid and dynamic." It sounds like this person, who is a big fan of Overwatch 1, has, if anything, become more positive toward the game. So I don't know if this is just a personality and taste thing, as opposed to it being like, you know, measurably less content or less to do. But fuck, I tell you what, in the little Google review sidebar when I looked up Overwatch 2, a lot of fucking one stars.
I mean, I reckon if you anytime they change a rule in any sport, you will get the exact same reactions as are happening to Overwatch 2 here, where people be like, this is dead, you killed it. Some people be like, this is exactly what the game needed. You revived it. Like,
and then 5 years later you go, oh, it actually was pretty good, because the people who made the change had spent years figuring it out. But everything's different yet again, you know.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It'll always take some time to figure out it. But then, you know, like, I think the biggest issue at this point is the DDoS attacks. There was a second one, apparently, like, overnight. So people are really trying to fuck people's shit up.
And online games, you know, even if no one is deliberately trying to attack them, often, I mean, Splatoon 3 is still a little choppy on its good server stuff. So it'll happen with any of them. But yeah, it's just such a weird thing in terms of like, what even is a fucking video game anymore? Like, Overwatch 2 doesn't mean jack shit. It's Overwatch 1 has gone free to play, and now you can pay for a battle pass if you want to. And they deleted Overwatch 1. But just called it Overwatch 2. Like, they didn't delete it. It's still here. You just don't own it in the same way anymore. I don't know. And it never had any single-player stuff really in it.
Right.
It was all seasonal anyway. So it's nothing's really changed.
I guess it's just an excuse to make people review it again.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a getting back in the public consciousness, trying to make Overwatch, you know, a big relevant thing
make,
again. Which
make Overwatch great again. Yeah,
I think that is the way that they have phrased it.
Mm. But yeah, because if you do the seasonal Fortnite thing, it's just like you're preaching to the choir. Like that's really only going out to people that are already in the ecosystem. Whereas like.
Yeah,
an announcement of like, yeah, this is out. It's like, well, that gets a, you know, that gets a few extra tweets, gets a few more
articles
on it than it would have otherwise.
And Fortnite goes, hey, it's chapter 3 now. You're like, what? You're not a book? What are you talking about?
Oh, Thor. Wait, not Thor. Thanos is there? I guess Thor was in it too. But yeah, they have their big things. But they also do feel a bit like if you're not already playing it, you're confused as hell as to whether this is when to play it or not. But I guess, yeah, this did get me to play Overwatch 2, and I do enjoy playing it, so I guess you got me, Blizzard. You got me.
Yeah. All right. Fuck
cool.
off.
Cool. That's going to do us
it's
for another week.
It's fuck off time now.
It's fuck off time. Thanks very much for listening, guys. Head to filthycasuals.com.au for the links to all the stuff that we have going on. We've got the Patreon where you can support the show, get an extra episode every week, every Monday. That's us talking about movies and TV shows and just anything that we're interested in culturally that's not video games. We've also got, the hundreds of videos on the YouTube channel. Yeah. We've got us playing Grounded. That we talked about earlier. We've also got a playthrough of The Quarry, which we just finished.
Yeah.
Tons and tons of videos up on there, usually two a week. All sorts of different stuff. One-offs, big, long playthroughs. So, yeah, if you enjoy this, go check out the video stuff because we all enjoy doing it and we all think it's pretty good stuff that we're churning out over there.
As I mentioned at the start of the episode, if you want to review us as in terms of a pod, that'd be great. If you want to go and subscribe and like and do all of the YouTube stuff that people always tell you to do, that also would be appreciated. I know we never really say that stuff, but it's genuinely really, really helpful for you to comment and like the posts, like the videos, share them, post about them. It really helps us. We don't really have any other kind of marketing arm. So, it's all you, Filth. And we really do appreciate when you do it.
Same with the Patreon, I guess, since we're just saying all the stuff we appreciate. Like, we appreciate that enormously and try our best to make it worth it for you.
If you want to
do that and if you're able to, you know, times are tough. And that means they're toughly affecting us too, baby.
That's right. I think every country
in the
world,
every
country in the world except for America's dollar is plunging. So it's a great time for the Yanks to jump on board. But our $10 US tier is a free podcast every single week. It is early access to YouTube videos, and it's also the Bandcamp or the premium episodes, which we've put them all up in the back catalogue, so you get all of those if you jump on, and you'll get the next one that'll be coming up in a week or two.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for listening, guys, and we'll see you next week, and as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals.
It's weird that Ben didn't mention whether or not Matt Damon's performance was good in Let's Build a Zoo. We bought a zoo. Remember that movie? I googled who was in We Bought a Zoo. It was worth it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.